Daniel 11. Also in the first year of Darius the Mede, I, stood up to confirm and strengthen him. And now I will tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings will arise in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than them all. By his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Greece. Then a mighty king shall arise, who shall rule with great dominion, and do according to his will. And when he has risen, his kingdom shall be broken up and divided toward the four winds of heaven, but not among his posterity, nor according to his dominion with which he ruled. For his kingdom shall be uprooted, even for others besides these. Also, the king of the south shall become strong, as well as one of his princes. He shall gain power over him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. And at the end of some years, they shall join forces, for the daughter of the king of the south shall go to the king of the north to make agreement. But she shall not retain the power of her authority, and neither he nor his authority shall stand. But she shall be given up with those who brought her, and with him who begot her, and with him who strengthened her in those times. But from a branch of her roots one shall arise in his place, who shall come with an army, enter the fortress of the king of the north, and deal with them and prevail. And he shall also carry their gods captive to Egypt, with their princes and their precious articles of silver and gold. And he shall continue more years than the king of the north. Also, the king of the north shall come to the kingdom of the king of the south, but shall return to his own land. However, his sons shall stir up strife, and assemble a multitude of great forces. And one shall certainly come and overwhelm and pass through. Then he shall return to his fortress and stir up strife. And the king of the south shall be moved with rage, and go out and fight with him, with the king of the north, who shall muster a great multitude. But the multitude shall be given into the hand of his enemy. When he has taken away the multitude, his heart will be lifted up, and he will cast down tens of thousands, but he will not prevail. For the king of the north will return and muster a multitude greater than the former, and shall certainly come at the end of some years with a great army and much equipment. Now in those times, many shall rise up against the king of the south. Also, violent men of your people shall exalt themselves in fulfillment of the vision, but they shall fall. So the king of the north shall come and build a siege mound and take a fortified city, and the forces of the south shall not withstand him. Even his choice troops shall have no strength to resist. But he who comes against him shall do according to his own will, and no one shall stand against him. He shall stand in a glorious land with destruction in his power. He shall also set his face to enter with the strength of his whole kingdom, and upright ones with him. Thus shall he do. And he shall give him the daughter of women to destroy him. But she shall not stand with him or be before him. After this, he shall turn his face to the coastlands and shall take many. But a ruler shall bring the reproach against them to an end. And with the reproach removed, he shall turn back on them. Then he shall turn his face toward the fortress of his own land, but he shall stumble and fall and not be found. There shall arise in this place one who imposes taxes on the glorious kingdom, but within a few days he shall be destroyed, but not in anger or in battle. And in his place shall arise a vile person, to whom they will not give the honor of royalty, but he shall come in peaceably and seize the kingdom by intrigue.
So before we go understanding that these prophecies are fulfilled literally, and the promises of the Lord's coming and his kingdom will also be fulfilled, and the promises made to Israel will come to pass. So thank you that you are trustworthy, and that when you promise us eternal life, you give us eternal life. When you promise an abundant life, you give us an abundant life. Just pray that we would enjoy it, Lord. So we just thank you now in Jesus' name. Amen. So this is an amazing prophecy. This whole book is an amazing prophecy. Dreams and visions that God gave to Daniel were kind of a code, a great and terrible image made of various metals, unusual beasts that represent world empires, a great tree that was cut down, and only a stump remains, a ram with two dissimilar horns, and a male goat with one great horn, which is broken off, and from it grow four horns. Now these are all metaphors or pictures in prophetic predictions. But in chapter 11, the prophecy is very straightforward, involving real kings, real battles. It is the longest and most detailed prophecy in the Old Testament. It is also primarily in reference to two kingdoms and their respective kings. One is the Seleucid dynasty to the north of Israel, and the Ptolemaic dynasty in Egypt. Last night we were studying actually the birth of Christ, and in our book, Story of Hope, there's a map in the front, and we looked at where Nazareth was and where Bethlehem was, and how Joseph and Mary, they wouldn't have made this trip in a million years when she was expecting a child to go from Nazareth to Bethlehem, which was a long trip, especially on a donkey. And Flint made the comment, he said, look, at above here is Syria, and below is Egypt. Here's Israel, right between the two. And that's exactly what we're talking about tonight. It's called the hammer and the anvil. Israel was in between these two nations which were warring against each other. And of course, their battlefield was Israel. So it was a time of terrible persecution and problems for Israel. And it covers this period of time which is called the silent years between the Old and New Testament. So they're not really silent because God is giving a prophecy concerning that time. And it really is pre-written history and amazing in its details. Now, when we read through it, you probably had no idea what in the world is it talking about. Pretty confusing, isn't it? In chapter 10, we saw that the angel gives a heavenly perspective of events on earth and what's going on in the spiritual realm. In chapter 10, which is the introduction to the prophecy, which goes to chapter 12, he says that there's actually a battle going on in the heavens. Chapter 10, verse 12, it says, then he said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, and behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I have been left alone there with the kings of Persia. Now this is amazing. There's a spiritual warfare going on, which Daniel, he couldn't see it, but the angel tells him, I came, I was sent, but I was withstood for 21 days, 3 weeks before he could come. If you look at Revelation chapter 12, we see this being played out in future prophecy as well. Revelation 12, verse 7. Revelation 12, 7. And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon and his angels fought. But they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven anymore, or any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, and a serpent of old called the devil and understand many events and philosophies of this present day, because we know in the end times there will be more and more doctrines of demon deception. Evil men shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. And these are indeed demonic-inspired things. The world lies in the lap of the wicked one, and the Satan is seeking to implement his plan to be worshipped by the whole world. But to succeed, he must unite the whole world politically, spiritually, and economically, and that's what this, when you think of Antichrist, that is what he will do, and that's been Satan's goal. And so we should not be surprised when we see these events happening before our eyes, the movement to unite the world, and using events like COVID-19 to accomplish it. Because there's a political aspect to this that is really is Satan-inspired. Now in verse 1 of chapter 11, we have the angel reveals to Daniel that he had confirmed his strength in Darius. In chapter 11, verse 1, the angel is speaking. This is a continuation of verse 21 of the previous chapter. Also, in the first year of Darius, I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. Now, it could refer to Michael, but it probably refers to Darius. And remember, Darius was the king there in Babylon that was willing to put Daniel in this position of authority, and which is why these other princes conspired to have Daniel thrown in the lion's den. Remember that story? That's Sunday School 101, so you should remember it. But you see the strong anti-Semitism. We saw it back in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were accused of not bowing to the image. Remember, it was those Jews that you have set over the kingdom. There's strong anti-Semitism, as there is today, which is increasing daily in our country and this world against the Jews. And so there was this opposition to Daniel's leadership, and perhaps that's why the angel strengthened Darius. Because we know that Darius had some faith, didn't he? So he told Daniel, he said, your God will deliver you. I don't know how strong his faith was, because remember, the next day he said in a lamentable voice, Daniel, are you okay? So his faith was there, but it wasn't very strong. So then verse 2, he talks about the kings of Persia. And now we'll tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings will arise, far richer than all. By his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Greece. The angel informed Daniel that the present leadership of the Persian Empire would be succeeded by four rulers. The first was Cambyses, Cyrus' son, who came to the throne in 530 BC. He was followed by Pseudo-Smerdis, who reigned for a short period in 522 BC, who was succeeded by Darius I, Hystaspes, who ruled from 521 to 486, and he in turn was succeeded by Xerxes. And we know Xerxes from the book of Esther, because his name there is called Ahasuerus, who ruled from 45 to 465. And Xerxes was the most powerful, influential, and wealthy of the four. During his reign, he fought and sought to invade Greece, which is why Alexander was so angry with Persia, because of their attempt to invade Greece. And many believe that the book of Esther took place after the last failed attempt by Xerxes to defeat Greece. And there were several kings who followed Xerxes, but he was the one who made Alexander and the Greeks angry when invading their territory. Next, we have the history of the Grecian Empire. Minor, and Syria. His conquest reached to India, but he died at the age of 32 from malaria combined with drunkenness. He conquered everything but his passions and everyone but himself. And so that takes the Lord to do that, doesn't it? He's the only one who can subdue us, and he can do it, and he will do it. We yield to him. Then we have the four winds of heaven. So in verse 4 it says, when he is arisen, his kingdom is broken up and divides toward the four winds of heaven. So it divides into four parts, but not among his posterity, because Daniel, or Alexander, didn't have any posterity, nor according to his dominion which he ruled, for his kingdom shall be uprooted even for others besides thee. So it never reached the size or the power it did before, but it's divided. Look back at chapter 8, verse 6. We have another prophecy concerning the same thing. And we have this male goat in verse 5 that came from the west. And he had one notable horn on his between his eyes. And this is speaking of Greece, and the horn is romantic. And he came to the ram that had two horns. Of course, that's a picture of Media Persia, which had seen standing beside the river and ran toward him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram. He was moved with rage against him, attacked the ram, and broke his two horns. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, but he cast him down to the ground and trampled him. And there was no one who could deliver the ram from his hand. Therefore the male goat grew very great, but when he became strong and large, the large horn was broken, and his place came in four notable ones, came up toward the four winds of heaven. So, speaking of the same person, Alexander the Great, and what happened after he died. So in Asia, the Macedonian commanders who served Alexander fought each other for power. So Perdiccas and Melander were murdered. Antigonus rose to control most of Asia, but his growth of power brought the other Macedonian generals in coalition against him. He was killed in battle, and the Macedonian Empire split into four main kingdoms. The one, the Seleucids in Asia or Syria, Ptolemy in Egypt, Lysimachus in Thrace, and Antipater's son Cassander in Macedonia, including Greece. So these, the Bible is totally, perfectly accurate in describing what was going to take place. That the four winds of heaven, there will be four different kingdoms that come out of Greece. So we see here that God himself intervened, removing Alexander and dividing his empire, because unlike the Medes and Persians before and the Romans who followed him, Alexander was a universalist seeking to impose Greek culture and philosophy upon the whole world. And dividing his empire prevented him from setting up a one world government. And as we said, that's always been Satan's goal, is to set up a one world government with his man in power. That is going to happen. And so the following verses then, from verse 5 through verse 20, detail the conflict between these two powers, which came out of Alexander's empire. There was the Ptolemies in the south of Egypt, the Seleucids in the north, Syria. And because of the land of Chalcedon was between them, Israel was very much affected by their actions. And if you talk about injury and murder and fighting and back and forth, that was the Seleucids and the Ptolemies. The strong king of the south, verse 5. The king of the south shall become strong as well as some of his princes, and he shall gain power over him, and that dominion, his dominion, shall be a great dominion. So we have the king of the south and his prince. Ptolemy the first, the king, and Seleucus the first was the general who later ruled more territory as the ruler of Babylon, Persia, and Syria. And they attempted to make an alliance, however, verse 6. And at the end of some years, they joined forces. For the daughter of the king of the south shall go to the king of the north to make an agreement, but she shall not retain the power of her authority, and neither he nor his authority shall stand, but she shall be given up to those who brought her, and with him who begot her, and with him who strengthened her in those times. Makes perfect sense, doesn't it? This was made between Ptolemy II and Antiochus II, and was sealed by the marriage of Berenice, the daughter of Ptolemy, to Antiochus II. But in order for Antiochus to marry Berenice, he had to divorce his first wife, Laodice, who later murdered Berenice, poisoned Antiochus. Y'all know, have no fury like a scorned woman, huh? So she murdered Berenice and then murdered her husband, placing her son, Seleucus II, on the throne. Well, that didn't set too well with the Ptolemies, of course. And so they decided to have their revenge. Verse 7. But from the branch of her roots, that's Berenice, shall rise in his place, who shall come with an army, that was her brother, enter the fortress of the king of the north, and deal with them and prevail, and shall carry their gods captive to Egypt, and their princes, and their precious articles of silver and gold, and he shall continue more years than the king of the north. So Berenice's brother comes, Seleucus II, or is it Ptolemy II, and kills Laodice, or whatever it is, and takes over that kingdom and plunders it. He received the title Eubertes, meaning benefactor, because of the spoils he took back to Egypt. But then, isn't this how it works? You know, you have someone being attacked, and then, you know, it's like the Hatfields and the McCoys. They killed one of ours, so we got to kill one of them. It goes back and forth and back and forth, and that's what's happening here. They keep trying to avenge these wrongs instead of, as the Bible talks about, and such were you. You were hating one another and seeking to hurt one another. And it's like games, you know, you just fight each other, and there's never any end to it. You just keep killing and killing and fighting and fighting. Well, the Lord can end that, can't he? Take away that chaos and bring peace in relationships, and even in marriages. So, counterattack now. Counterattack to the counterattack in verse 9. And the king of the north shall come in the kingdom of the king of the south, but shall return to his own land. However, he fails there, and his son shall stir up strife and assemble a multitude of great forces, and one shall certainly come and overwhelm and pass through, and he shall return to his fortress and stir up strife. So Seleucus II tried to invade Egypt but failed. After he died from a fall off his horse, his son Seleucus III ascended the throne. He was murdered and replaced by his brother Antiochus III, the great, who ruled for 36 years. These two brothers were able to regain much of the land lost to the Ptolemies up the southern border of Israel, where it says up to the fortress, verse 10. multitude, but the multitude shall be given up into the hand of his enemies. When he has taken away the multitude, his heart will be lifted up, and he will cast down tens of thousands, but he shall not prevail. Now, what's that about? Well, the king of the south here is Ptolemy IV, who was known for his indulgent lifestyle. And finally, he was tired of Syria's advances, and he mustered an army that included 70,000 infantry, 5,000 cavalry, and 73 elephants to fight Antiochus, who had more men, 72,000, 6,000 cavalry, and 102 elephants. I can't imagine fighting with elephants. Antiochus suffered a monumental defeat, losing 10,000 men and another 4,000 captured. Ptolemy did not pursue his advantage, however. Remember, he's indulgent, he didn't fall through, and he did not regain control of Syria, although he did regain control of Israel. So Israel was changing hands. It was part of the Seleucid Empire, now part of the Ptolemaic Empire. So now we have to have Antiochus III. What's he going to do? Well, that's 13 through 17. For the king of the north will return and muster a multitude greater than the former, and shall certainly come at the end of some years with a great army and much equipment. Now in those times, many shall rise up against the king of the south, also violent men of your people. So these are Jews that are joining forces with Antiochus III. And so violent men of your people shall exalt themselves in fulfillment of the vision, but they shall fall. So the king of the north shall come and build a siege mound and take a fortified city, and the forces of the south shall not withstand him. Even his choice troops shall have no strength to resist. But he who comes against him shall do according to his own will, and no one shall stand against him. He shall stand in the glorious land, that's Israel, with the destruction of in his power. He shall set his faith to enter the strength of his whole kingdom, and the upright ones with him. Those against are Israelis. Thus shall he do, and he shall give him the daughter of the women, to destroy it, but he shall not stand with him or be for him. Now here's something as well. Antiochus III gathers a large army, joined forces with Philip V of Macedonia. That's verse 14. Then he shall rise up against the king of the south. So he has others that join with him, joined by rebellious Jews who sought to overthrow Egyptian rule, unwittingly fulfilled the vision of chapter 8 about Antiochus Epiphanes. As you remember, Antiochus Epiphanes is going to at first be peaceful and act like he's a friend of the Jews, and then he's going to turn on him. He besieged the fortified city of Sidon and prevailed against Scopas, the Egyptian general. And that's verses 15 through 16 there. When Ptolemy IV dies, Antiochus sought to gain an advantage by giving him his daughter. His daughter's name was Cleopatra, not the other Cleopatra, Mark Antony and Cleopatra. This is another one. In marriage to Ptolemy V, who was only 4 years old, began to reign. I think when she was given in marriage, he was 13. He thought that his daughter would influence the kingdom for his purposes. So Antiochus sent his daughter, and he wanted her to be kind of be used by him and fulfill his will, but she instead sided with her husband against her father. So it didn't quite work out the way he planned it. Next we see Antiochus dies, verse 18. And this, after this, he shows Assyria only to die a year later while trying to rob a temple of Nemo. What a way to go, huh? Robbing a temple. His failure to reunite the empire of Alexander paved the way for Rome to expand its borders. So, because Greece was weaker, Rome was gaining in strength and power, and they were about to conquer. And then finally, we have Seleucus IV, Philip Pater, 187 to 176, in verse 20. It said, then shall rise in his place one who imposes taxes on the glorious kingdom, but within a few days he shall be destroyed, but not in anger or in battle. So this son of Antiochus III heavily taxed his people to pay Rome, but he was poisoned by his treasurer, Heliodorus. This allowed Antiochus IV Epiphanes, a little more than Daniel 8, the forerunner of the Antichrist, and great persecutor of the Jews, to ascend the throne. And so next week we're looking at verses 21 through 35, and that's devoted to this Antiochus Epiphanes, who is called the Antichrist of the Old Testament. And he's a picture, and then it moves on in verses 36 to then talking about the final Antichrist. So, now if this were just history, we would marvel at its accuracy, but in fact it's fulfilled prophecy with the stamp of divine revelation upon it. And we know from this that God knows the future, and he intervenes, so that even the evil that men do and the work of Satan fulfill his will. And this, again, is one of the main themes of the whole book of Daniel, is that from the very beginning, God rules in heaven. God's in control. So this election, God is in control. We can rest. We don't have to get our night in a snarl. We don't have to get upset. We can pray and leave it in God's hands. But he will do his will. And we need to rest then in God's truth, or the truth of God's sovereign control over all things. And the negative things that come in our life, God has a good purpose for them. You know, sometimes we reap what we sow, sometimes God chastens us, sometimes evil men do evil things. But we have to believe Romans 8:28, don't we? That God is working all things together for good to those who love him and are called upon his purpose, and so we can trust him. And someday we will be amazed at the wonderful plan of God when we see that everything he allows is for his purpose. He works all things for the counsel of his will. So, next week we'll have a test on this, and